Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf. Oh boy, Tony. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
It's so exciting.
I was kind of wondering about that phrase, happy Halloween. I mean, I was happy when I was a kid, right?
Definitely. It's the best holiday.
But are you happy to be scared at Halloween?
Of course. It's fun.
So we're live today.
Gently scared.
We're live today and taking your calls, 410-662-8780. Toll free 866-661-9309 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. And the basic topic, I mean, if we don't do a show on scary food, fears about wine.
Fears about wine. I bet there are a lot of those.
People, you know,
there's plenty of food that people are scared of.
I think it travels
from those childhood memories, right?
If we can help you through an issue, or if you have a food-oriented Halloween costume you wish to call and describe, I'm sure that everyone will be interested to hear what that is. I watched people walking around last night going to Halloween parties. One gentleman dressed as a giant banana.
Oh, okay.
That was quite interesting.
Fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, next to a chocolate bar.
Yeah, our meat purveyor sent me a photograph of his costume, and I just was really surprised when I saw it.
I don't think anyone wants to know about meat purveyors wearing costumes, frankly. That sounds like a horror movie, which is, I guess, Halloween apropos.
Really red, actually, but yeah.
So I know, at some point I'll ask, in the last segment of the show, we always do a challenge, a chef's
mm-hmm.
challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And that may or may not be scary, depending upon the circumstances that I give Chef.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
I may have to change my list.
This one may be a lot.
Oh, gosh.
I knew that you were a fussy eater when I met you, and there were things you did
not
like. You were not?
There are a couple of things left over from childhood, like I just sort of mentioned, that I may not have liked when I
like
met you.
All olives,
yeah.
Cilantro.
Yeah, raise your hand out there if you didn't like olives when you were a kid. Thank you to the thank you to the people in the other room for both raising their hand.
My daughter, who is not yet three, loves olives.
Oh, well, good.
Always has.
Okay, that's awesome.
So there.
Well, you probably gave her good ones. When I was a child, you know, a long time ago, got canned black regular old olives, and I thought they were just probably the grossest thing I could ever eat. And I would like to include in that list from childhood cube steak and liver with onions and peppers. Those were the two things that made me want to cry when I could smell my mom making them and knew we were having it for dinner.
But you weren't scared of them, you just didn't like them.
And what was cube steak?
You were scared of your mom making you eat them.
No, I was actually scared of having to eat them, truly.
Really? Yeah.
Well, you know, not scared like some people feel about food with heads on. No,
ooh,
I think people are scared of that.
I have that list.
I don't. Okay, so go ahead. Let's hear your terrifying finds from around the world.
Yeah, looking up the most terrifying foods in the world. I will admit, this is an old list.
I cannot wait to hear what this is.
One article that I found said humans are like goats. We'll eat any damn thing. Just ask the people who make power bars. So, Number one, escamoles.
What's that?
They're the egg of a giant black ant.
Oh, okay. I think
they live in the agave
plant. I think I agree with the people that are afraid to eat that.
Collecting the egg sounds like the bad job.
I honestly can't imagine eating a live bug.
So there is, and this is a thing that I learned when I was in Sardinia the first time. There is an illegal food. Called casu marzu.
Okay.
That is a sheep's milk cheese that has been infected by a kind of fly.
Oh,
and
golly.
There is a weeping, maggot-ridden cheese.
Oh, no, stop.
That is considered...
Did you say it's
advanced in its
ridden?
Decomposition? Yeah.
Oh, golly. My Lord.
I promise we'll get more appetizing at some point as we go along here.
All right. Well, that's scaring me.
Yeah, that's...
I wonder how ancient that tradition is.
There is another larvae-ridden cheese that is from Norway. It's called lutefisk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And for all of our fans of wine, there's a baby mice wine that is is a Korean tradition where they put very young. Yeah,
shouldn't. I don't know. It's just shocking what you're. I mean, you know. But and so I'm sure those things are important to the.
The least scary thing to me is there's a dish from Iraq called pacha, which is a particular boiled sheep's head dish,
mm-hmm.
which.
Doesn't seem that odd.
No, we just eat all the parts
of
it.
A lot of cooking.
A
lot of cooking.
I mean, frankly, eggs and brains. With capybara and brown butter is a great dish.
Right, right.
May not make me popular, but I do like to eat it. I'm not going to... The live animal... And I'm not going to get into all
right.
business.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
That's the supposed to be terrifying list.
Okay, well, what food are you...
That sounds a little more like disgusting sort of list.
What food are you scared of?
I don't think anything. I'm the guy that asks,
You are brave when it comes to food, for sure.
I like to introduce people to things that mm-hmm. maybe they might find... Like, people just get scared or don't like the idea of tripe. And I like tripe very, very much. I think textural things often are people's fear. Is the texture going to be strange? And
sure.
You know, I think that's why a lot of organ meats for some people. But again, I kind of grew up with them, and so.
Sure. Well, and I think that's it. It's also how they're prepared, as you just said. I mean, I've tasted tripe several times, and I just, even as a chef, I have not been able to enjoy it until someone that works for me from Mexico made a traditional Mexican tripe dish that had a lot of tomato product in it. And honestly, it was delicious. And it was the first time I could really stomach actually eating the tripe itself. And I don't know if it was the large amount of acid that is in the tomato that broke it down and maybe changed the way it felt on the palate. I don't know, but the dish was absolutely delicious. So, and I know that there are many tripe dishes that are, but it's definitely something that it's not for everyone. And
well, again, you can.
I mean, I can understand that. It's a little bit like, you know, some people just can't handle raw oysters, and then there are other people that, you know, many other people that think raw oysters are one of the most amazing things you could eat.
Yeah, my dad would come home with a quart of oysters from the market, you know, on like Friday when he was done with work, and just. You know, I remember being 4 or 5 years old, standing in the corner of the kitchen, just eating oysters with my dad.
Awesome. Well, and my sister to this day won't eat oysters. Like, she just doesn't like them. So, you know, some things last forever, you know, and maybe it's because she's never really, maybe I've never made them for her, or someone that really loves oysters that
You've
knows how to work with them.
You've never made oysters for your sister?
No, that's not something the only thing I ever do is my mother loves fried oysters. So I've certainly, you know, fried oysters for the family so that, you know, my mom would be happy about it. But we've never sat around and had raw oysters as a family.
Well, you can give us a ring and share your fears today. 410-662-8780. And I think we have one or two emails already from folks. We have one from Jay and Esther in Baltimore. I have a 3-year-old who loves Halloween, and I recently reviewed a bushel of farm-picked apples. Sorry. And my reading or the spelling is not working out. Can you suggest a recipe for spooky apples that
cute.
I can make for him tomorrow?
That's nice.
He's sick with a cold, and I'm looking for ways to cheer him up on his favorite holiday.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, I hope he feels better soon.
I'm just curious what his costume is going to be.
Well, really.
My daughter's going
to
be in a very elaborate dinosaur costume.
Ooh, that's cool. I think what immediately comes to my mind, the fact that he's not feeling well, is making something warm with the apples. I'm not totally sure how to make something spooky out of apples. Maybe you have an idea, but I would make, I like to, and leave the skin on, mostly because the skin has most of the vitamins
googly
in
eyes.
It.
Googly eyes on the apples. You can make a little apple tarts and put scary faces on them.
Yeah, okay, there you go. But I would saute them in butter with a little bit of cinnamon and maybe a touch of brown sugar. And just make them nice and soft and, you know, serve them warm, because I think that would be probably make, you know, someone feel better. Or you could even make that and puree it. And, you know, it's just a different form of applesauce, which I know when I was a kid, I used to love. My mom would always make fresh applesauce and serve it warm at dinner. And then maybe with a little bit of vanilla ice cream. Or some sort of other flavored ice cream that he loves.
It sounds delicious and comforting and in no way scary.
No, I know. I can't think of a way to make it scary without, like you say, sort of putting googly eyes on it. Or making a pie with a, you know, sort of a scary pumpkin face made out of the dough. You know, you could cut your dough piece on top and make it a scary pumpkin face and put it on top and bake it. That would might be fun.
So, scary pumpkin face pie.
That's all I have. Okay. Apple pie. Apple pie with pumpkin scary face.
We have one from Diane in Baltimore City. Anything useful you can do with all those silly pumpkins people have for Halloween?
I guess it depends on what kind they are. You mean the ones that are already painted or something, probably?
The question to me is, like, when did you buy them? Because the longer that they sit out, the more that they kind of dry out and they're going to lose their flavor. So you want to look. If the stem is still pretty darn green on that pumpkin, jack-o'-lanterns are not going to be, they're not so good for cooking at all.
Right.
They're a whole lot better for carving. But some of the other kinds of pumpkins that you can get, whether it's the ones that they'll call fairy tale pumpkins or Cinderella pumpkins sometimes. Yeah. Those have great flavor.
They do. And you can make pumpkin soup from those. You're going to do something that you're pureeing the pumpkin. Or you could attempt to make a pumpkin puree. But I would just make soup. You know, maybe a little andouille sausage or tasso ham or add a little bit of autumn spices, mace, nutmeg, cinnamon. If you do drink alcohol, you could add a little bit of rum to the soup to make it pretty, or cognac, or even Cointreau. A little orange-flavored liqueur would be a tiny bit at the end, might be very pretty. Or you could make pumpkin ice cream from it.
Pumpkin? Well, that's pretty quick turnaround to go from a pumpkin you're carving to ice cream. So you're going to be scared of the chef challenge.
I can't wait. Okay.
In the third part of the program.
I'm just changing yours right now.
Okay. You can do whatever you need to do.
It's all right. It's a living, breathing thing, the chef's challenge.
Here is a non-Halloween question.
Okay.
From Ben, Skaggsville. Beef bourguignon. Mm-hmm. What are some tips and tricks for home cooks trying to recreate the meal themselves? Tips and tricks. I guess that's their Halloween
for
reference.
For home grilling?
For beef bourguignon.
Oh.
Not home. If you're going to grill.
I'm still asleep.
If you're doing grill.
Jeez.
One, someone immediately get chef coffee. Two.
Yeah, right?
Not too much. Three.
No. Beef bourguignon.
If you can do the non-grilled version of beef bourguignon, if you can tell someone how not to botch it,
okay,
that would be good.
Okay, a beef top round. Or a beef shoulder, which is a huge piece of meat. But get a piece of beef that is a little bit tough. That's why you're braising it. And clean it up. Cut it into probably 3-inch pieces, 3 to 4-inch pieces. You want kind of bigger pieces so that when you go to break it apart, you can pull it into nice size pieces, in other words. You want a large pan, meaning that you need a pan with a good surface, a bottom surface, because you need to brown this meat. And if you overcrowd your pan, when you go to brown something, it will boil instead of browning, and you will end up with something you don't like at all.
So a much larger pan than...
Then you're going to really need in the end, most likely.
Yeah.
Or if you don't have a big pan, then use the biggest pan you do and do the meat in batches. So
And a heavy bottom one.
Yeah. So,
all right, so
stainless steel.
We have to go to break real quick.
Pan.
We're going to leave you browning the...
All right.
The beef for the bourguignon, and we'll get back to that when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we left you mid-browning on the bourguignon.
Mm-hmm.
And we do want to complete that recipe, but it's going to take a few minutes to brown. So we're going to leave it sizzling in the pan. and take a call from Alice in Lutherville.
Hello.
Hi, Alice.
Alice, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
I had a question about chicken feet. My husband really wants to try chicken feet, but it kind of creeps me out. So I was just wondering what your experience was with that and if you could compare that to something else that I would be familiar with.
Have you had chicken feet?
No, I have not.
Well, they're a whole lot smaller to deal with than the shanks of cows or even pig's feet, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it's the kind of thing that you braise.
Yeah, and honestly, the only thing I've ever done with chicken feet is add it to my stock. So they do bring gelatin to a stock and make great flavor in a stock. So honestly, I don't even know that there's really anything on there to eat. There's mm-hmm. almost no meat. There would be almost no meat on there at all. Mm-hmm. So I would make my husband happy by having a pot of stock on the stove with his feet sticking out. Maybe, I don't know, but I would make a great stock with them. And that's really my only suggestion.
I ate a lot of unusual things in college years with my roommate from Taiwan. His sister-in-law was a fantastic cook, and chicken feet is on that list. And also snake, which is quite delicious.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I don't know if my husband would like that because he likes snakes as pets.
Well, yeah, I like them better with like a sweet, spicy, almost like what seems sort of like a soy-based barbecue sauce that she would brush them with, and they're really, really good. Almost like frog's legs as far as texture and flavor. With the chicken feet, she braised them a long, long time. They were part of a soup, and then the soup got like a really bright green chili oil added to it that was really very good. And it just kind of fallen apart. It was really not that. You know, it's a long braised item. A lot less scary when you actually cook them properly.
Okay.
Thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alice.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's
a good question.
I think I can understand people when you see them in the market.
They are sort of fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like I said, they make great stock.
Well, sometimes in the U.S. we don't always utilize all the parts of the animal, so it's kind of.
Well, when I make stock now with chicken backs and necks, I add the feet and veal bones that are split and veal feet as well. So it really adds tremendous gelatin to the stock, so it makes for great flavor.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah.
All right, let's dial it back to sizzling
beef bourguignon.
Sizzling beef shoulder or what other cut did you say?
Or I said the top round. You could actually use a top round.
The top round.
But I prefer something that has a lot of fat.
So you're cutting that into a slightly larger version of the cubes that you would expect to be in the dish to finish, right?
Actually quite a bit larger so that you end up with nice size pieces that you can just pull apart rather than actually. I don't actually dice mine anymore. There was a time where I did, and I just would prefer to have the larger pieces. And you want to add carrot mirepoix to the pan after everything is browned. So you've browned all your pieces beautifully in oil, preferably something neutral like corn oil. You've removed them from the pan. If you can't get all the meat in the pan at once, as I said, you don't want to overload your pan, which brings the temperature of the pan down, and you will not be browning anymore. So once everything's beautifully browned, put it back in the pan, add carrot, celery, and onion in a large dice, and deglaze that pan. The action of deglazing means that you are adding any liquid to a pan to bring up the fond off the bottom, which is all the brown, wonderful, fantastically flavored things that stick to the bottom of the pan and which creates color and flavor. So you're adding red wine to the pan to remove that, clean up the bottom of the pan, if you will, and that all becomes part of the sauce. And then add what I would add is chicken and veal stock to cover. And so it braises with a little bit of red wine and a lot of stock. The stock needs to cover the meat, and you need to be on the very lowest temperature so it just gently, gently simmers and that the meat cooks very quietly, very, very gently because you're tenderizing the meat in that process. You can either pop that in the oven with a lid, or you can leave it on the stove with a lid. Either way, whatever you're more comfortable with.
But that you're going to cook at a relatively low heat.
Low heat, long time.
Long time.
So once you feel...
You add wine at what point? What sort of volume? Because I think that's one thing where people get...
Either
over-enthusiastic...
And you don't want to put too much wine in because it will blow out the flavor of your sauce. So let's say you're doing, you know, beef for four people. I would add a cup of red wine and then enough stock to cover the meat, which is probably going to be 8, 10, 12 cups of stock. I would add in a sachet. What I mean by that is if you can buy some cheesecloth, just cut a big square of cheesecloth. And in that, we call this a sachet. We put you could put all kinds of things in there. But for this purpose, I would just put a little bit of bay leaf and peppercorns in there, and you could put a sprig of rosemary in there, tie it with butcher's twine, and throw that in the pot. Oftentimes, I will tie the string to the side of the pot if you have a handle so that you're not fishing around trying to find it later, so you can pull it out easily. And as the meat tenderizes, once it is nice and tender, then remove the meat, and if you feel you need to reduce the braising liquid to closer to sauce consistency, if you feel like it's too thin, you can do two things. You can either begin to reduce it a touch, or you can add a light roux to it. Roux is butter and flour used as a thickening agent. Equal parts of butter and flour, and I would say for four people, I probably do maybe 3 ounces of flour, 3 ounces of butter. And what you do is you gently melt the butter in the pan, you whisk in the flour, you toss it around for a little bit on low heat because you do want to get a little bit of color to your roux for something that's rich like beef. And you would whisk that into, you would cool it because the roux needs to be cold if you're adding it to a hot liquid. So you would cool that in the refrigerator for a little bit and then you would whisk it into the boiling braising liquid. And allow that to thicken for 30 minutes. Anytime you add a roux, you want to let that product cook for 30 minutes to work out the sort of floury taste of that
You have to cook the flour.
Engine. Yeah. Yeah. So 30 minutes. And then since you have the meat out, I would strain that. And that cleans it up beautifully, pass it through a fine sieve, and then add it back to the meat. And now bourguignon is traditionally garnished with mushrooms. Say Cipollini onions or pearl onions, and you could add a little bit of bacon, a little bit of lardon, we say, large dice of crispy bacon if you wish. So that's beef bourguignon.
A nice autumn dish.
Oh,
On a strangely warm autumn day.
And a wonderful thing to make on Sunday, and then, you know, you can have it, you know, the next night if you want, maybe change the garnish. If you're serving it, maybe you serve it with noodles, or you serve it with rice, or you serve it with potato puree or creamy polenta, or you make a little risotto, more vegetables.
Yeah, it doesn't usually beg a delicate garnish. And we're talking, besides the bourguignon, we're talking pretty much food fears and scary things about wine. The number to call if you have a question or you want to talk about these items, 410-662-8780. Toll free 866-661-9309, or email us, as several folks have done, foremanwolf@wypr.org.
So what else are you scared of? Oh, that's right. We decided that you're not scared of anything.
There's a few things.
Your perspective as a restaurateur, what do you find?
People are scared of?
Yeah, people are scared of.
I think
you're in the front of the house. You know better than I do.
I think people are... People are scared of it's funny. I guess people do this. They go to a doctor in a hospital and they'll tell the doctor what they think is wrong. And doctors, I found, having spent plenty of time with them, are wonderfully patient and will actually just tell you what's going on and not be too, you know, and not let you get too wrapped up in what your self-diagnosis might have been. They'll actually just go with facts, you
know? Right.
And I don't try to flatter myself to think that I have remotely the skill or intellect of a physician, but I know wine very well, for example.
Sure.
And
you do.
When guests come in and I know that they're a little freaked out that they may... It's funny because you go to talk to your doctor, you're not scared about looking silly. Mm-hmm. But someone goes to talk about something on the wine list, they're scared of looking silly.
Okay.
I think that's the biggest fear in wine. Mm. I think that there are two things. It's funny. I think most of America still likes beer more than wine because they can rely on beer to be consistently the same.
Okay.
There's product X. It's made this way. You know, that's you follow that. Wine has vintages, and they're funny names for things.
Right. It's in different languages, oftentimes.
Yeah.
Many different languages.
I mean, if you want to know,
which is intimidating.
If you want to know about wine fears, I'll give you three simple words.
Okay.
Grüner Veltliner.
Oh, yeah.
Is one. Toroldo Italiano.
Oh, my goodness.
Is another.
Yeah, only you can say that.
Nerello Mascalese.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Isn't that right?
People.
I mean, so.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I agree. It is. It's intimidating to look at a wine list and be, you know, you didn't want to say, a lot of people, you know, don't want to feel silly saying something incorrectly, although we don't care. We just want to make you happy.
Those are the names of three grapes that are magnificent grapes that speak well of where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
But they're maybe not the easiest thing to look at a list and to mention. And if it's a language that we don't know, like you said,
mm-hmm.
Although I find people are more brave in Spanish
that's good.
And in Italian than they are in French.
Okay.
I think the number one wine fear is the saying any French words. And I know that for me, and I have reasonable facility in the language, I know that for me, I'll pronounce things, and no matter where you are in France, someone's going to sort of
correct
you. Probably going to correct you.
Sure.
And you have to recognize that that's okay, because probably anywhere you are speaking anyone else's language,
right, right,
they're going to think, huh, he just said that funny, or, you know, and they may try to help you out.
Sure, which is great.
You know, but we can tend to have a chip on our shoulder about that correction. So I think that's the... As I've watched most people's food fears fall away, you know, I think that's what I was going to say.
You know, having cooked now for 30 years, watching how things have changed over the last 30 years, you know, what people were scared of and what they're no longer scared of it, which is so great and exciting.
And you know, it's like in Italian food, we try to make sure we use all parts of the animal. So
sure. We
get a lamb. We're going to use the brain.
Mm-hmm.
We put the brain in the pasta.
Mm-hmm.
And people...
Which is incredible.
One,
so good.
It is so good.
But I understand it's scary.
But you know what? If you're cooking on its own and someone's scared of the texture and they're going to see it, they may still be scared of it. But if you just make it as part of the force meat going into a filled pasta, they're not so scared. And then they realize they have it. And it's delicious. And maybe the next time, maybe we cook it with eggs and caper berries and...
Yeah. Right.
Not so bad, not so scary.
Right.
So I think that people have really come along in that particular sense. But I do think that some of the wine fear is still there. And they will often cling to the thing that I was waiting for the call where someone says, I'm scared to still order Merlot. You know, because that's been you know, sort of uncool for some people.
Hmm.
And all I can think is that Merlot and Bordeaux, I mean, those wines that are Merlot-based from Bordeaux, like Pomerol or Saint-Emilion, are some of the greatest. I mean, honestly, my affection for Pomerol is
crazy. Mm-hmm.
And that's usually 90-95% Merlot. But we think of wines by varietal names first. I think, honestly, that one of the reasons that Merlot caught on is because it's easier to say than a lot of other things.
That makes sense. Yeah, you know,
Chardonnay is not that hard to say.
Yeah, some of those other things you said were pretty horrifying.
Yeah, but I love Grüner Veltliner.
Oh yeah, me too.
And when I open a bottle of Nerello Mascalese for someone that you know that's grown on Mount Etna, Nerello Cappuccio, those wines are fantastic,
and people
have great affection for them. Hmm. But they'll remember one of those wines from Etna. Etna's easy; it's a four-letter word.
There you go. All right, I get it. How about livers?
I love liver.
Yeah.
See, that's you're not going to get me on this stuff.
Yeah, well, the thing, you know, talking about over the last however many years, there was a time, you know, I love the fact that things have sort of come full circle with using the whole animal, and that there was a time, say in the 80s or the 90s or even in 2000, where everything was primal cuts, tenderloin, loin, rack.
Well, what? No one can afford that anymore.
Well, that's part of the problem.
But to me, that's not. I mean, you should enjoy and celebrate every part of the animal.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. So that I think that's what's exciting about what's happened with foods and food and old chefs, young chefs, all chefs, you know, really celebrating and bringing in whole animals and doing a lot of butchering and
you mean working the way we did 100 years ago?
Exactly. Like I said, full circle. It's just kind of amazing that, you know, I guess it was convenience that changed things at some point, or, you know.
Convenience and abundance.
Yeah.
You know, and that's as food has become a little more global and not remotely regional anymore for most people, it's great to source things nearby, but you can source things all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many, you know, when I talk to guys in Sicily about fish, they talk about how their prices have gone up because they're constantly fish out of the Mediterranean headed to Japan because some of the best fish in the world is being used for sushi on the other side of the globe. I mean, you know, within under 24 hours.
Well, look at something like sweetbreads that used to be super, super inexpensive, and now they're very expensive, which just tells you there's demand for it. And that's,
yeah, fear of sweetbreads has mostly gone away.
I think so, too. And people really love them. I think people have really embraced.
No, it's exciting time to be. If you're our age and still cooking, it's an exciting time to be doing that because
absolutely.
You watch that evolution in a lot of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, it's a little more on food fears and scary wines. And then I'm expecting a terrifying chef challenge for Chef Cindy Wolf. On WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf. Happy so, Halloween-ish.
Happy.
Almost.
Well, yeah, oh, happy Halloween.
Yeah. Well, people started celebrating last night, so that's cool.
So a couple of years ago, we did a program we should tell listeners about we'd like to do again. We asked listeners to give us send us an email at foremanwolf@wypr.org and let us know about what they cook at home and what they're excited to cook. And we'd love to do interviews with a couple of amateur chefs. So, you know, please send us emails at foremanwolf@wypr.org. And you can call us, not on that topic, but about scary food if you like, in the next few minutes on WYPR 410-662-8780. Or toll-free 866-661-9309. And we have an email that we just got.
Good. What you got?
Joey in Baltimore. Scared of shrimp. They resemble insects, not seafood.
Well, they do.
Those legs. Kind of lobsters, too. So
lobsters are a little scary.
How do you?
Some guy caught, like, you know, whatever it was, the Guinness Book of World Records largest lobster. I wouldn't want to be swimming next to that thing in the ocean. That was huge. So, yes, they are a little scary.
I'm not scared of shrimp.
But
I'm not scared of insects. I mean, that's we crawfish.
Yeah.
You know,
crawfish are probably more.
I just read about I want to try the giant ant eggs from Mexico that live in the agave plant. I don't know. I just want to know what they taste like.
Sure. Well, you're brave.
They might be disgusting.
Mm. Shrimp can be amazing, particularly with the heads on. Make great sauce.
Yeah, that also scares people. They'll ask for things to be served without the head.
Yeah, there's a pocket of fat in the head that a lot of people love to eat. So there's a lot of flavor in there.
Now, were there people
there's a reason for the head to be on.
For the squab, you know, the little pigeons that come to the table without the head. They ask for them to come without the feet. They ask for them... what else? Quail, same thing. They don't want to see those.
And in contrast, I had a guest eat the entire head the other night, which I'm like, yes, you are awesome. So, you know,
That's,
but to each his own.
Yeah, that's sometimes you're really hungry.
Mm-hmm. We have a call, Tony.
So I think it sounds like they're clearing a complicated call.
Okay.
So you better save time for the chef's challenge.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to say.
Right. Well, why don't I give you yours right now?
No. Here we go. Let's go ahead and take this call. So we have Zena in Baltimore. Or Zena. Sorry.
Zena. Hi, Zena.
Zena, hello.
Hey.
Hello. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Well, let me turn down my radio. I didn't know I was going to be on right now. Hi.
So
I was going to tell you about two recipes. They're both from Ethiopia.
Awesome. I love Ethiopian food.
Who
doesn't? So one is the stomach. Once you clean it nicely, this is the cow stomach.
Mm-hmm.
You basically blanch it so that it gets rid of everything that's not clean, and it partway cooks it. And while it's still very, very hot, you wrap it into a very, very tight a phyllo dough or something. If you're making medallions, you wrap it really tight, and then you cut it into strips, thin strips. And once you've done that, you cut it some more so that it's like shorter, not too long. We don't want it to be like a spaghetti long, you know?
Zena, we have a very odd connection with you. If you can maybe try us back in a moment, and we can keep going with, because this is a fascinating recipe. So that's, I want to know where she's going to go with that, but.
Yeah, that's too bad.
We've got to hear a little bit clearer than that.
Sure.
There is only one thing that I'm actually not, I don't know, but you know what? It weirds me out. Jellyfish.
Oh.
I definitely ate some jellyfish with Jiangshun in college, and
mm-hmm.
I just, no.
How was it prepared?
It wasn't a texture
Yeah,
I genuinely don't know. It was in a Taiwanese restaurant in little one in Philadelphia, and
mm-hmm.
I don't know how it's a jellyfish. It's not like you can grill it or something. I mean,
that's why I said how is it prepared?
It has
I can't
to be cooked
imagine.
In liquid somehow. I guess it's probably just poached.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something I'm like, yeah, that's beyond my ability to like it. And I don't think I don't know. Because soft textures don't mess me up too much. I think we're going to have to get into a chef challenge, though.
There you go.
Me first?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. I changed it a couple of times.
Yeah, you sure did.
So scratch outs.
Oh, tripe. Very good.
Yes.
All right, so
tripe. I know you can handle it.
Spaghetti squash, fingerling potatoes, radishes, kale, ground pork, onion, garlic, shallot, veal stock, rosemary, thyme, parsley, bay leaf, carrots, parsnips, cauliflower, tomato puree, jalapeno, beef kidneys. Okay.
That's a good way to end it.
Yeah, beef kidneys are
I think that's also
strong.
Good. That's
like
good
veal,
for you.
Veal kidneys, nicer. Beef kidneys are strong. Beef kidneys get your full attention. I think the only wine pairing for beef kidneys is scotch. let's see.
That's
tripe.
Wine.
I tell you what I want to do with the tripe is I want to brown off that ground pork. After flavoring the oil with a lot of the onion and garlic and shallot and the rosemary, and I want to brown off that pork in that with some of the kale and a little bit of the parsnips, and I want to stuff that, I want to poach that tripe lightly, the way she was describing, and then I want to wrap it, stuff it with ground pork, you know, almost like you would a sausage and a little bit of the vegetables. And a little bit of the jalapeno as well, and then that I want to brown a bit on the outside, just gently, and then finish that in the oven, and almost like something that's braised. So you need a little bit more of that stock to bring that down. When you have that cooked all the way through, and it's nice and tender, then I would take that stock down a little bit further with a little bit more with a bay leaf and some of the tomato puree that you've given me here. Bring that down into a sauce and serve that with that sauce. And maybe the fingerlings that are just like boiled and smashed and have good olive oil. That actually, I would eat that in a heartbeat
good.
For
it
lunch
does
today.
Sound good.
Let's see. And the beef kidneys, man, that's some work too. That's a lot of cleaning. Those are big kidneys. And to cook the entire one, like one at a time, That's you need a seriously big pan. But mostly you're gonna have to clean them. I mean, literally run water through those guys for hours and hours.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna have to poach them and you need vinegar for poaching them too. Just to get them to like a, you know, almost like a par cooked, like rare, medium rare sort of point. And then you want to sear them off really well. And they take more salt than you think. It's kind of a funny thing. And you want to sear that off very well, finish that in a slow oven, and cook that to medium well-ish, maybe not all the way through. What you don't want to lose is, you don't want the texture to tighten up completely on the kidneys. And, I don't know what to put with that besides a big glass of scotch, frankly. I guess you would, as a warmer-upper, you have the radishes and the carrots and the cauliflower to make almost like a crudité. I guess you would have that before something as rich as that. But I think I've used everything but your spaghetti squash.
It's good.
So I'm sorry. I'm saving the spaghetti squash for another day.
If they were veal kidneys, how would you handle it? Instead of beef kidneys?
More gently. And they don't need the poach up front.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that can just be handled in the pan. And it's just good because of size. It's less cleaning time.
Right. Got it.
So, all right. Here's yours. And yours, the scary thing, is a situation.
Oh, boy. So, and what's the situation?
On the bottom of the page.
No meat, no dairy? Is that what you mean by the situation?
Yes. Yeah, no meat, no dairy. In other words, you have two guests coming over to your house, so you have a good kitchen to work in, but they eat no meat.
Okay,
and
that's no problem.
And
all right.
They eat no dairy.
All right, so we have a dozen sea scallops in the shell, and two dozen.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Two dozen oysters of your choice, a fillet of Atlantic swordfish, center wheel, fresh black beans. I love that. Avocados, golden beets, romesque, manchego cheese, cilantro, basil, apple cider vinegar, dry sherry, cumin seeds, garlic, red onion, Fresno chilies, poblano peppers, and something I can't read. Standard kitchen, yours. Is that what that
something
says?
Something you can read.
Standard kitchen?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Sorry. Dozens of oysters on the half shell. Obviously.
So what kind of oysters would you choose?
I'm just going to say I would choose, we can get Bailon oysters now in the United States. So I would use Bailons because I love them. They're my favorite oysters from France.
You must like these people.
Yeah, they are kind of expensive. And so obviously we're all standing around drinking champagne and having oysters on the half shell. That's what we are all doing. It says no dairy, no meat. Chef, it didn't say anything about no champagne. Yeah. Scallops in, I love scallops on the shell. So you're going to steam them open. You have red onion. Okay, so red onion, garlic, a little bit of olive oil in the pan, and let me re-say that. White wine, the garlic, the sherry.
Your kitchen, so what's in your kitchen?
Yeah, and you just have so many ingredients here. Fresno chilies and poblano peppers are all going in the pan to steam open those scallops. And all of those things will just be kind of overwhelming in a way, but if you just are steaming them open in it, it will just perfume it rather than actually using it as a garnish. So let's have all that going on. That'll be fun. And meanwhile, I'm cooking my black beans with the cumin seeds and a little bit of cilantro in water. And I'm going to make a black bean and avocado salad, which I will also garnish with the romesco, which is just kind of an oddly shaped, almost pyramid-shaped cauliflower. And those beans and the avocado and the cauliflower can be garnished with a little bit of the basil and the apple cider vinegar at the end. And I'm trying to figure out what I haven't used here. So those scallops, I think that broth, if I steam them open, that would be the second course after we had the raw oysters. I would strain that broth and if I had butter, I would mount it with butter, but I don't, because Tony thinks it's funny that I can't cook without butter.
Right.
So instead, I am going to use the broth. I'm going to use the broth that's been flavored with all those wonderful things. And basically, you'll have your scallop in front of you in your bowl with that broth in the bottom. And then I'm going to drizzle a little bit of extra virgin olive oil around, just because it will give a little bit of richness to the dish. And the golden beets. Okay. So you have
your beets and swordfish left.
Right. So I think the beets, because that black bean business was sort of a middle course. So then we move to the swordfish, and I will grill it, because I just love to grill outside, and this is going to be a great time of the year to do that. So cut into nice big, probably 8-ounce portions. Rub it with a little.
So big.
Rub it with a little bit of extra virgin olive oil, a little bit of the apple cider vinegar that I have left over, and just rub a little bit of garlic on it. Grill it to rare or medium rare, depending on my guests. And the golden beets I would have roasted in the oven and a little bit of salt and peeled them. And I would put them on the grill at the last minute. I'll cut them in half, grill them at the last minute, and that will get a little bit of, more of the cider vinegar and extra virgin olive oil as a garnish. Yeah. There you go. It's a lot of ingredients.
It's a lot of stuff to play with.
That's a couple of courses.
It can be hard to restrain yourself from dairy with seafood sometimes.
No. I mean, extra virgin olive oil is kind of an amazing thing. What I love about extra virgin olive oil is that depending on where it's from, what type of olives it's from.
Is it fresh?
Exactly. Well, it has to be fresh in the harvest year and what the olives went through. There's so many different, it's just like having different sauces, because the different olive oils from different parts of the world, or even from, like I said, different types of olives have different flavors. And so it's a lovely thing to use. So I love olive oil and extra virgin olive oil in particular. And certainly you don't need dairy when you have some, you know, a nice array of olive oils to use in different purposes.
I thought you might make a good olive oil and like herb condiment or something for those scallops when they're steamed. That's the one thing I thought you would do that you didn't do.
That's because I used all the peppers in the broth.
Yeah.
So, very different. Okay. So, there you go.
So, what would you have done differently with mine?
I would like the idea of the tripe with a tomato product, which is why I gave you the tomato. You know, as I said, that's the only tripe I've ever had that I really liked. The kidneys.
It is nice to have the acid.
Yeah, I think the kidneys are something that are so, as you say, intensely flavored. I would like to cut them and grill them and, really have something hearty with them, like caramelized onions and the garlic and the shallots and deglaze, you know, maybe, as you say, you know, finishing those kidneys, popping them on the grill to get a wood grill, I guess I should say, to get some smoke into them.
Finishing
them in the oven with all those like caramelized onion product, and then deglaze that pan with red wine and stock and make like this crazy intense reduction sauce.
Yeah, but I'd be the guy that would eat it. You wouldn't eat it.
No, I wouldn't.
Because you're scared of kidneys.
I'm not scared of kidneys, but I wouldn't eat them.
That's all we have time for on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR. If you want to correspond with the program, it's formanwolf@wipr.org. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
on Instagram, Chef Cindy Wolf, and on Twitter, Chef Wolf.
Thanks so much for listening.
Have a good Sunday.
Mm-hmm.